Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Basketball fans, the College Ball Show is back. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to break down everything that is college basketball. We're really coming down to it. One last big Monday, like they like to call it on ESPN. We are going to talk a little bit about what's going on right now. Baylor managed to get by West Virginia. Virginia Tech has a small lead at home on the newly top 25 team, number 25, Miami, who's been making a nice little streak into the tourney. Of course, North Kakalaka went down swinging in the first game. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We're not going to jump into that stuff right away, though. We are going to start with the weekend. And what a weekend it was. Now, like I said, we are down to it. This is the last big Monday. We're 6 days away, actually less if you count it. It's a little less, a couple hours less than 6 days. Selection Sunday is just right around the corner, man. I cannot wait. I'm really excited. But we will start the show with recap from Saturday and Sunday. Some really crucial games, happened, no doubt about it. We had an upset. Gonzaga finally went down. It's that old saying that maybe you should get a loss out right away. You're having a little background noise. I'm going to mute you just for a second. The old should you lose? Do you want to lose before you get to where you have to win six straight to win it all? Usually you don't want to lose, but hey, if you're going to lose, why not lose now? So maybe it's a case of that for BYU and Gonzaga. But other really, really tight ball games. I mean, that Arizona-UCLA game was super fun. And now you look, UCLA had all the talent. They don't have all the talent, but I'm saying they have enough talent to be a top-tier team and a Final Four team, quite frankly. But up until about the last 10 days, 2 weeks, they hadn't shown it against the quality teams in conference. So they definitely showed it there. We're going to break that game down. Miami, like I said, I was just talking about it. They're closing very strong. They upset Duke, and now Duke was there. You know, they went through some rough spots. I think they won five or six in a row. And then, man, they really are just limping, definitely limping in to the, to the tourney. They got, some big games coming up. They got Florida State and North Carolina still on the schedule, so who knows where they're going to be ranked. Kentucky, Florida, we'll talk about that. Kentucky definitely played a solid game. They're peaking at the right time as well. Michigan, a bubble team, they needed a win, and they got one against Purdue, a big, big win. Just a variety of other games that we'll get into. Who's hot and who's not? We got some clubs that are really fading down the stretch in other, teams like a North Carolina, like a Minnesota. I mentioned UCLA are streaking at the right time, no doubt about it. You know, the ACC and, I guess you could say the Big 12, but it was pretty much done anyway. But the ACC, we didn't get a chance to talk about it last week, how Kansas 100% locked it up, even though it looked like they were going to lock it up anyway. But now that's, you know, been done. But the ACC and the Pac-12 in the SEC were all on the shelf. They're all on the table. They were there to be had. Now, technically, the ACC, you know, I don't think it can be there to be had unless Duke would do the, not the impossible, but they'd have to, because they just lost again. I think they have one too many losses because they are the only team. Louisville and Florida State lost to Duke or to North Carolina. So Duke's the only team up around there that beat them. But I think they're a loss too far out with that Syracuse buzzer beater as well. That was a hell of a way to end the game, no doubt about it. But like I said, those conferences that I talked about, those were basically being decided. And like I said, the ACC is not all but done, but I think it is. I think it's pretty damn close. Now, North Carolina could lose. But I don't know. I'm going to have to relook at that now that they lost tonight. But I'm pretty sure they're still in control. But some other games that caught my eye. A Butler-Xavier game was really fun. Speaking of a streaking team, Butler. You know, Marshall, I think they're pissed off that you didn't want to put them in the top four for a seed a couple weeks back because, geez, they've made a nice little run and they beat Villanova. It's kind of crazy. We talk about matchups all the time, and some teams just have the other team's number. We talked about Florida State and Duke, and we also talked about, what would you talk about recently? Miami and North Carolina. Last 5 years, they played North Carolina pretty well. Sometimes it just happens that way. And you see that a lot. And Butler here, they beat Villanova twice this year, which is pretty unexplainable, really. Kind of funny. Cincinnati had a long winning streak. They lost to SMU a little short while back. Central Florida beat them as well. They're definitely fading down the stretch. Michigan State got a big win over Wisconsin. Wisconsin's fading a tad bit too. Just to catch you up right now, 3 minutes to go in the first half. Miami down 23-21 to Virginia Tech on the road. And then KU is tied up with the Sooners 16-16. They're only 11 minutes into that game. Like I mentioned, 71-62, Baylor did get through against West Virginia. Tight game, though. And then Virginia put the wraps offensively, you know, well, they put the defensive wraps down on North Carolina, who really the last two games had played really solid defense. That Louisville game, I thought they played really well and closed it out, but they lost tonight 53-43. And obviously Virginia, I mentioned them, who's hot, who's not. They've been fading majorly. So they were really back against the wall, needed the W. North Carolina didn't need the W per se to win the ACC, so I think it has a lot to do with that. Like I said, though, we will kind of go around the conferences and kind of catch up who's hot, who's not. And then we will preview the games coming up for the last week on the schedule. Like I said, this is the last regular season. Selection Sunday is not far away. It's 2 weeks away. I jumped the gun a little bit. I don't know what I was saying a week away. A week away. I'm so pumped that March is coming, I guess, that I meant the conference stuff. Then it's Selection Sunday. We're still away from Selection Sunday. I realize I just did that. But we are going to break down the games that still really matter, whether it's seeds, whether it's in conference, Purdue just barely hanging on to the lead in the Big Ten. So we'll talk all about that. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host here, Marshall. Marshall, man, let's talk about Saturday and even Sunday to a lesser extent. But Saturday, man, you even texted me a lot of fun games across the country. Couple ones I want to highlight, obviously UCLA, Arizona, BYU, Gonzaga. BYU definitely, they definitely stood up and had a great, great game. And then Kentucky looked solid at home against Florida, who had won, I believe, 9 in a row, something like that. And we can hit up some other teams. Obviously, I'm going to do a nice, a sizable segment on my Gophers because, you know, we haven't been able to do too many segments there for a while. Seven in a row, I think the longest streak now that Gonzaga and Florida lost. Seven in a row. And all I know is my guys are going dancing, dude. We're going to the big dance. We're 22-7 at Northwestern. I'll get into it later. But let's talk about this stuff. Let's talk about this stuff. We had a hell of a Saturday, man, and a couple of these conferences, and we missed last week, unfortunately. Kansas wrapped it up, and they really looked good doing it. So we didn't really get to talk about Kansas all the way cleaning it up, although going into last week we thought that that was going to be the case. But we had a lot on the line, Marshall, and the ACC was up in the air. North Carolina grabbed it and really looked good. Yeah, sure, tonight they lost. But like I said, I think Virginia was just that animal trapped in the corner that needed to do something to stop the bleeding and help their seed come a couple, you know, whatever, 13 days from now. What was your take just overall from Saturday, man? Let's start breaking down some of these games because there was a couple ones that were really, really meaningful. And this is when you want to close, right? You want to close strong.
Yeah, and with that noise, I'm driving home. I'll be off the highway in 10 minutes at most. When I'm not talking, I'll just mute myself. So to make that
clear. It sounds a lot better right now. So
yeah,
we're good.
It's pretty smooth ride. On Saturday, it was a full slate Saturday with basketball. It's kind of like college football. You get to see almost all your teams play. And if not, then I'm going to give you a nice Sunday game. It was a fun day. I was actually going to go to the West Virginia TCU game, considering I live, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes from the arena. But a fellow coach of mine that I work with gave me free tickets to the Dallas Stars hockey. So I went to an NHL game on Friday night with free tickets behind the net, which was tough to argue with. So I guess I kind of got my sport fix in and slept in. But, I mean, TCU, West Virginia, even to add on to the games you already listed, was a fun game. TCU is a team, Chris, where currently they're on the bubble. They're a team that has basically been a complete laughing stock in Big 12 basketball, honestly almost comparable to Kansas in Big 12 football, and they've kind of been a bottom-tier trashy team. And who's always been kind of a joke. And now you bring in Jamie Dixon from Pittsburgh, who was wonderful there for, I want to say, at least 10 years. And now he has this team on the bubble, and they haven't gone to the dance, I believe, since like 91 or 95 or something outrageous. So you have a team like them who they did lose on a wide-open three at the end, which they could have made for the win, but it wasn't a bad loss. Against a team, Chris, in West Virginia, who, man, if basketball games were only 30 minutes and the ref just randomly blew his whistle and you didn't know the game was coming down to the end, West Virginia's a good team. But at the start of the year or throughout the first couple episodes of our show, I talked about how, man, can you really be that good with the style of the way they play? And now they've just come down to the point simply where they're just not a good late closing team, Chris. I mean, for a while this year, we had a talk of, you know, West Virginia won the Big 12, or how good a team are they? And they can have a 20-point lead or a 10-point lead or anything. And the fascinating thing to me, Chris, is that they're a team that loves to press. And so that tells me you got to practice that and practice a ton. You know, if you're a great pressing team like West Virginia is, you clearly must do that in practice against your teammates. Yet, normally, when they have blown all these big leads, it's from teams that press them. So it's just a fascinating concept because that game they did blow against Kansas was a choke job for the ages. I'm not saying it was Matt Ryan in the Super Bowl, but when West Virginia blew like a 15-point lead at KU with 3 minutes to go, you know, just something about that team, I don't know. So that game alone was a fun one to watch. Also, you mentioned Florida-Kentucky. That was a game where Kentucky came out and basically was net Florida the whole first half. But Florida didn't steer away because they've had a pretty just respectable season this year, and they've not been a team that really gets scared often about going on the road. But I remember it was probably with, like, I want to say, Chris, about 11 or 12 minutes to go, and Kentucky were on this little, kind of little bitty run of like a 6-0 run, but it went from like a 4-5 point lead to a Kentucky 2-point lead, and you could just tell the place went nuts, and I just kind of had that gut feeling of this game's over. Because in college basketball, you know, it's so hard to win on the road, especially when you're playing a team who, in Florida's situation, had destroyed Kentucky and smacked them pretty good in the face. And you knew Kentucky was going to fight back. And after they went on that run with about 10 minutes to go, it was never a game again. Not that Kentucky got up by like 20, but Florida never came close again. It was within 5 or 6. And Mr. Monk for Kentucky, who apparently all these ESPN people love to rip on, saying he always takes a poor shot selection when he's on the road. Well, hell, he dropped 30 in the second half at home. And last I checked, dropping 30 in your second half at Florida at home is pretty good. This is the same dude that dropped 51 on Carolina at home. So I guess he forgets how to shoot when he goes on the road, but he doesn't forget about that in Rupp Arena. But overall, Chris, I mean, those were two fun games with four teams that are going to the tournament. TCU might have a little bit of work to do, but they're definitely a bubble team, and a bubble team that I enjoy simply due to the fact, like I mentioned, they were a joke of a team, and you bring in a new coach with a freshman point guard and a sophomore center who are two talented players, and now you're looking to go to March Madness for a school that normally wouldn't even go to the NIT. So those games alone were kind of a nice start to Saturday.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that is a good point about, you know, we got a couple of those programs that aren't really known but are kind of chilling on the bubble. Obviously, Northwestern has been respectable, you know, but they haven't got over the hump, obviously. We're going to talk about your boys in just a second, but let's focus in on the West Coast now. Gonzaga goes down to BYU. Obviously, what were they, 29-0? Is that what they got to? Am I right when I said that? I think it was 29-0.
Yeah, it, I believe 29-0. So. Yeah, 29-0. You're right, my friend. You're right.
They were 29-0, and BYU just played solid. I mean, they weren't spectacular by any stretch of the imagination. They didn't get a ton of bench points. They got a little bit of a spread offense. Micah, whatever that guy's name is, he had a hell of a game. And 3 of 16 stood out to me for Gonzaga. They had a bunch of turnovers. That's not to say, though, that BYU didn't either, you know, but they're supposed to move the ball and have the most assist on everything. They had a 8 assists to 16 turnovers, so that's probably not going to happen a ton. But 3 of 16 from the three-point line. And then it's nice you get to the line 29 times, right, Marshall? That's a great number. 16 out of 29, that's not a good look at all. Really, Williams, the guard, he's the only guy. He was 5 of 5, but everybody else, for the most part, kind of struggled, especially in the starting lineup. But, you know, it's the old story, Marshall. It's probably better to lose now if you're going to – well, not probably. It is better. But, you know, that whole thing of do you want to get – is a loss good? Do we start to see them – do we start to see them get ahead of themselves? Were they overlooking? What do you think that whole thing comes down to? I mean, they lost the game. Big deal. Was it? You know, the problem is they don't have a ton of good wins, so – that's enough to knock them off the number one seed potentially. You know, when we start to say who's hot and who's not, we're going to get in that segment. We're also going to be kind of in the bracketology because a new bracketology came out today too. So we'll talk a little bit about that. BYU, that might be enough to knock them down. What do you think? I think they just played a bad game. That's what it looked like to me. It's really, you know, not much to do about anything. And then down the stretch, UCLA, Arizona, fun game. UCLA's peaking at the right time, man. They closed it out. So we'll cover the West, and then we'll take a couple of different things we want to get to North Carolina, because the way they've closed, maybe not today, but the last two games, last three games, they look really good too. So we'll get into that as well. But what do you think? I mean, did Gonzaga just play bad? Sure, they were at home, but I think it was just a bad game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we've kind of said it all year to where, like, the only thing that could cause an issue for Gonzaga is St. Mary's and BYU. They played incredibly respectable against St. Mary's on the road and at home. And I believe they smacked BYU pretty good the first game at BYU. So I believe they played them twice with BYU at home and away. But you're on your magical run. I mean, BYU is a rival team that always seems to play well. And this was a close game. Like, I think Gonzaga kind of had the lead for the most part of the first half and started the second half when it kind of became a trade of basket game, and then BYU closed out strong. So, not embarrassing. And I'll say this, Chris, I do think losing now is okay, because they add that extra pressure of trying to run the table. And also, I still think it saves them the possibility of being a one seed. I think if they'd lost in their conference tournament, I think that might have been a dagger that kicks them out of the one seed. Again, you always like to mention what wins.
Or to a lesser team, too. That's a good point.
Yeah. And, you always love to mention recency in our college football. Well, when did it happen? How relevant is it compared to, what else is going on? And you lost to a rival, and again, we're not in the conference tournament yet, because, whatever you think about what your team has done this whole year, the conference tournament hides and up just simply because more people are watching, the bubble talk is bigger, and we are closer, one week closer to March Madness. So I do think the possibility of them being a one is still clearly relevant, because I think in the top five conferences especially, which normally one or one seats, there could be some bloodbaths in those conference tournaments. I mean, the ACC and Big 12 tournament this year are going to be, like, take a couple days off of work and kick your feet back, because it should be phenomenal basketball. I mean, obviously every conference tournament is always pretty fun, but those two conferences alone should be excellent. So, I guess if you were to lose, I think now is better than saving it for the conference tournament. You could say going into March undefeated could have been a super cool story, but, it also was an overslot here. So, the losing thing, I think the one angle, and that is, Chris, with how important social media is to everyone, especially kids this age in college, maybe that gives you a little bit of a hook, or a little bit of a break, because God knows if they did go into the tournament being undefeated, those are just the more questions you got to answer.
Exactly.
And on one hand,
a lot of pressure that they're not used to.
And on one hand, I've always kind of been a little torn on that, because on one hand, it's like, all right, I know that the people say the media can get annoying, but on the other hand, okay, yeah, maybe you don't like talking to reporters, but is that really going to keep your stud point guard, from not running a pick and roll properly or missing a free throw in a clutch moment when you know he's a good free throw shooter just because the press asked him seven questions on the day before a game compared to two, So I think he gets hyped up a little bit, but the timing of it was more beneficial, I'd say, than the conference tournament. And then you mentioned the UCLA and Oregon. That was one I wasn't able to watch. I did get a lot of basketball in during the afternoon and the morning. I was not able to see that game. But I think just to completely to add on to my point about UCLA is I think they're one of the more talented teams. They got a guy who could easily be the first overall pick in Lonzo Ball, or number two, with respect to Michael
Washington. Talk about pressure.
Washington.
It'd be nice if his dad would release some of the pressure off of his son.
his dad needs to keep his damn mouth shut.
He does seem like just one of those sports dads, dude, that you're just like, dude, let the guy get in the league first, please.
Yeah. quit digging your son a hole. But you know, they got Alford, the speaking of coach's sons, and who's always a great point guard, that's a good free throw shooter and loves to chuck threes. They got that center in Welsh, who is nothing flashy, but the guy gets the job done. He's a very tall, athletic guy. So I think that this is just an incredibly talented UCLA squad that, you know, looking at their resume, there's not too many holes on it. You know, whether it's been at the games on the Pac-12 network or I've been busy or whatever the case is, I have not seen them play as much as I'd like. But just from seeing scores and how they've done, they've really had a pretty damn good year, and, you know, one that's hard to argue with. I believe that you could say they're just as good of a team as Oregon and Arizona. You know, I think that UCLA team is playing strong. They're playing good basketball this time of the year. And actually, even the Pac-12 tournament should be a little more exciting than normal. For the last couple of years, you and I have done our shows. Whenever we get to this time of the year, it's like, okay, how many teams are going from the Pac-12? And we normally touch on that for about three minutes.
There's two for sure. There's two of them that are in, and then there's about four of them that are on the bubble, and you're like, oh, jeez.
Yeah, so at least now, again, it's a little top-heavy with Oregon and Arizona and UCLA, but at least that's a top-heavy respect that wasn't necessarily given the last couple of years. So, you know, if I had to pick today who I think will make the deepest run out of Arizona, UCLA, and Oregon, I'm not sure, because they all kind of do have their different
vibe
teams.
Question.
But you know, and again, I haven't watched them play as much as I'd like to do, because Arizona seems to be a little more hot and cold than UCLA and Oregon. But overall, they're representing their conference with a little more fight and punch than they have of late, Chris, which is only better
they
now.
They got the best
I'm
coach, too, Arizona, I'd say.
And I'm not exactly sure if there truly is a – I'm just going through things in my head. Is there honestly a bubble team in the Pac-12? Or did I just mention like three teams that have a chance of making it? Because Washington's having a garbage year despite having a great player. I mean, Utah is not what they normally are. Oregon State has won like a game. Is there anyone even close to being on the bubble? Now that I think – I don't
what
think
about USC?
Is.
What about USC?
How did I forget about my Trojans? Yeah, actually,
I think they might be on the bubble because they've been playing good, for them anyway.
I can't.
Hard
to
hear a player
aren't
back anytime, but you know they don't got a guy with a beard there or nothing like that, but still, you know they got something going on.
They should be, and you're right. It goes to show that I'm definitely a USC football fan, but that does not translate to the basketball court per se. But you're right. I think they actually have a very good chance of being a definite tournament team, Chris. Good call on that. Besides them, though, I do
and
think
we
that
look
is kind
more
of
on
a,
that too. We'll look a little bit more when we break down bracketology.
Sure.
Who's not? Just real quick though, just wrapping up Gonzaga. We can't forget though that they beat Florida. They beat Iowa State, and they beat Arizona in the non-conference. So that's some quality things that will – and really with the conference, I mean, they have that one where their conference – their regular season's done now. So they have it during the week. They'll have that the conference tournament, you know what I mean, unlike the other ones that wait till the week after. So they will get a couple more quality wins. They still could make a number one seed, no doubt about it. Potentially anyway. So that is important there. And that's, let's revisit that when the brackets come out. Who out of the Pac-12 or just, I mean, yeah, those three, UCLA, Arizona, and Oregon, and I guess Gonzaga too in the West Coast, you know, overall. It's too bad Gonzaga isn't in the Pac-12 for their sake anyway. But let's revisit that if we can remember that come bracket day to see who's going to get the furthest out of those teams. Cause that is, they've all kind of taken turns, you know, being really, really good. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll let you kind of wrap up anything else you want to talk about from, you know, from the weekend. But let's talk about, and like I said, sure, they did lose tonight, but I think tonight Virginia was just a desperate team. And when you get that much desperation, you're at home. Obviously, they had their defense together tonight, no doubt about it. They've been struggling. But prior to that, North Carolina, I thought, for me anyway, for my money, I thought that they recently, the Louisville game, to me, the Louisville game and the Virginia game, 65-41 against Louisville and 74-63, those two games and back-to-back at that, Marshall, for me, you know, they had had that string where they were very hot. Then they lost to Miami, and then they lost to Duke. But to me, that back-to-back, Virginia in Louisville, and I know we're going a little far back because we didn't get to do a show last week, but not that far.
Sure,
Louisville was just last little bit here. But what'd you see different? Because we've been honing in on defense, defense, defense. And they've been playing not defense. They've been playing offense, but not defense. I'll tell you what, I was impressed on the way they closed the game and just impressed overall at team defense and shot selection. Just really those two wins of Virginia and Louisville. I mean, they'll probably win the ACC.
They've clinched the share.
Right. But I'm saying outright, and if they do, because I think the tiebreaker is going to get them outright anyway, because they just beat Louisville, and if they lost to Duke, well then they'd be tied with Louisville, but they just beat Louisville, and I think the same, they beat Florida State earlier this year as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think
they did,
and I think has that extra loss, don't they now? So they can't tie you and then beat you, tying you. I don't think that's on the table, right? So for me, the ACC was won in those back-to-back games, and it featured defense, man.
Yeah, it was a nice change of pace because, again, I've been a pretty – I don't like to be a homer fan. I like to be tough on my teams, and I've been, I would say, pretty tough on the squad. But I finally saw that switch get turned on, and I remember specifically, I think it was during the – Louisville game where I was like, finally, this is that defensive team that I need to see that can make it. I've said it all year. You can be incredibly gifted in an offense, but to make a run in March. But if you want to go for a title, you got to play defense. And we're clearly an offensive-driven team, but we finally had some games this year. We played defense. We played defense against teams you had to play defense against. That was kind of the extra reassuring part was – we were playing defensive games against teams that are known for their D, and we, like, out-D'd them. So it's like, my God, you know, the talent is there. So it was nice to see back-to-back games against Virginia and Louisville, who normally are going to grind it out with you, and then grind it out with them. And for Carolina, it's almost a perfect storm to where, okay, they play a slower pace, which is fine. We'll D up, but then we'll still play fast, too. It's like that perfect combination of Carolina would play great half-court defense, but the second we get the ball, screw it, it's our turn. We're going to try and score on you in 5 seconds. And they did. And to that respect, it's got to be super frustrating for a team like Virginia, who, you know, runs a slow-motion offense, wants to grind and halt you, and stop them. And then all of a sudden, they're not coming the same way back at you with a slow offense. They're going to try and run you off the court. And that's what Carolina did against Virginia. I was watching that game with my dad when he came down to visit. And Carolina just looked phenomenal that game against Virginia. And Chris, finally, I can say this is a team that has flipped that little switch. They've started to realize their defense. And things are looking up because and again, this is probably me being biased. You know, no shock there, but
I don't believe it for a second.
I don't believe there is truly. And I'm not saying we are the best, but I don't think there is a better offense in the country than Carolina. Just for argument's sake, we're a top offense in the country. And if they're There might be a better one by statistics, but just for an eye test, we have to be one of the best five or so offenses in the country. Because offensively this year, I mean, they've really started to find a way to work with the bigs, and we have a couple three-point shooters, which Carolina normally doesn't have. So offensively, we have the title. We have a title offense potential team. But that defense can't you can't flick the light switch back off now. We turned it on. Found out, okay, finally, and it's still not perfect. But it's a step in the right direction. But you can't go back. Because offensively, it's very, very fortunate this year to have four guys you can feed down low, because that's just got to be a pain in the butt to cover. That not many teams in college basketball are four deep when it comes to bigs. So I'll stop there because I'm about to hit a repeat rant that I've done already this year on Carolina. But, yes, you did nicely state how they played defense and showed that sign we've not seen all year, and that was a very reassuring thing as a true fan I am to see that, because that hasn't come out yet. So that was awesome. You hit that right in the head, and I finally can't go on the show and say our defense isn't good enough. It took a step in the right direction, Chris. So, yes.
And it did come against Eastern Tennessee and Milwaukee, Ohio Technical College. You know what I mean? It came the exact time you needed it. And obviously, it tells you they can do it. And when you have that against the wall thing, when once you're done, one and done, once you get into the tourney, so it tells you they can. But man, I don't think they're out of the woods. They're out of the woods. I just looked at all. They can't even tie. They can lose
and
still win, because that would put them at five losses. But they beat everybody else, so it doesn't matter. They just beat Louisville. They beat Florida State, and they lost to Duke. But Duke has that one loss. So they can't do it. Florida State, Louisville, and Notre Dame, North Carolina beat them all. So I don't think they can lose that. And I don't think they have any kind of weird Big 12 stuff going on in the ACC.
I was just going to make that joke too.
there could be that tiebreaker that they want 16 co-champs in a 9-team league. I don't know, but I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. Speaking of teams, my squad, the Minnesota Gophers, are now 26th in the country. That's right. We got stymied on the 25th, and this is bullshit, man. I'm going to the top with this numbskin. I'd rather not. I don't care. I'd rather try to work and get a 6th seed in the tourney than worry about being ranked, to be honest with you. But what can I say, man? I mean, 7 in a row, and, one of them came against Illinois, the other came against Rutgers. But if you think about it, we had Indiana in Michigan, and back then Indiana was on the bubble. And then Michigan, who's still on the bubble, but we're beating the bubble teams, which we were on the bubble. You know what I mean? And then to get that road win at Maryland, come back and beat a decent Penn State team, especially they were playing pretty well. Two games left, tied for third in the Big Ten, 22 wins now. They're in the tournament. They're in the tournament because the quality wins at Purdue, at Northwestern, at Maryland, they go a long way. And I know Maryland's fallen off some. They're going to make the tourney. Their seed's nowhere near what it was going to be a couple weeks ago. But still, it's a road game. And they're going to the tourney. They're not a bubble team. They're going to the tourney. So
they have really fallen off for you, right?
They really, Virginia, them, a couple teams has just nosedived, man. It's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, I mean, Reggie Lynch, we talked about it. Reggie Lynch finally had a game where he didn't foul, right? I still don't know how he did it. But he had 11 blocks in that game, and he had, gosh, what was it, 6 in the first half, I believe. I think his second game he had 8 blocks. You know what I mean? The guy's just a machine. He came from a smaller school, transferred. He's got this year and next year left. his big thing was falls, you know, obviously. Either in fall problem or he fall out of seven of them, Reggie Lynch. And the thing I've noticed during this winning streak, there's been a couple of things. Murphy, the guy next to him, you know, we got plenty of scoring now, whereas last year we needed him to score so much, Jordan Murphy. He's been a junkyard dog. If you look at his rebounds in the last 2-3 weeks, this guy is a machine. He's averaging like 15 points and like 14 boards. The guy is rebounding his ass off. And when you get Lynch there together, you know, Lynch, instead of getting the early stuff, the early foul problems, he's still getting in the foul problems, Marshall. No doubt about it. But he's waiting to wait until maybe 5 minutes left in the first to get that second foul and maybe – you know, deeper into the second half to get that third. And another thing, Eric Curry, who's kind of a forward, but we play him at center, kind of slash guy, both he can play both, power forward and center. He's a true freshman. He's got length. He's come off the bench and give us minutes. I think he averages like 6 points, five boards or something off the bench. He's been really glue for us. And then there's another center that comes in and rebounds, blocks shots, and it's just quality. So they got four bigs on the squad, but to me, they've just come together. We've gotten so much off the bench. McBryer has been huge off the bench. Knowing that, it's just Springs has played really good for the Gophers, the shooting guard, and he actually, during the losing streak, five in a row, you know, they put him in the starting lineup. McBrayer has responded off the bench. They're just pushing, and it's just so fun that Patino's – these are every single one of these guys are Patino's guys. So it's really showing what he can do, although it's an experienced team, most of it. I did say inexperienced in there. I kind of hesitate when I said it. But to know that they got everybody coming back except one guy next year, really
– sure.
It gets – excited to be a basketball fan in the state here, and that the recruiting is definitely coming along, man. And we know Patino can recruit. It looks like he can develop. But, yeah, man, I mean, they have a chance to get to a sixth seed, which I never would have thought during that streak. But I knew this team had potential. We talked about it around Christmas when we hung out there and at the old stomping grounds at Granite City. We talked about it, and then you asked me, I remember you asked me, I think it was the third game into the losing streak or something. I said, you know what, talk to me next week, but I still feel confident. It's just hard to feel confident four losses in a row or whatever. I still feel like we can turn it around and make the tourney. I never would have thought that they would have won seven straight. There's just no way. So anyway, a little long-winded, but hey, I haven't had all year to be short-winded, long-winded, or nothing. Usually it's just like, yeah, they lost two more games. Let's move on to the next subject, please. But now you can wrap up what you want to wrap up from the weekend, but I do want to get into – it's a kind of a combo because when you talk bracketology, you're really talking about who's hot and who's not as well. So I think we can kind of combo this up, but – if you want to jump into just kind of speculating on some of the bracketology stuff or clean up whatever you want from the last, you know, like I said, Michigan State got a good win against Wisconsin. Wisconsin's kind of fallen off a little bit. They haven't fallen all the way down because they're losing to quality teams, but they lost their, you know, their lead, and now Purdue leads in the Big Ten to win it all. But yeah, you can do whatever you want. Okay,
I will gladly try to break down what I feel Wisconsin's issues are, and then I will give you a definite who's hot team that I have, and then I will toss it back to you. And I texted you that who's hot team. But first, with the red flag for Wisconsin, this is a team that, for as long as I've known you, and Bo Ryan was there, it's been a team that runs just kind of a simple traditional offense. I get they have a different coach now, but still, the offense has always just kind of been Wisconsin has, you know, bigs that are versatile with a couple of good guards. They don't turn the ball over much, and they just run a pretty decent offense, and they play good defense. And their defense this year is still very good, but offensively, there's just no rhythm for this team. And I feel weird saying that because since, you know, I've always kind of been a fan because my best friend I always go on these trips with is a Badger fan. And when I go on my March Madness trips, I go on those trips with guys who played for the Badgers in college together. So it's a Badger-heavy crew, and I like to watch the games just because I've kind of grown into becoming more fan of them. But there's just something not clicking. You know, you can kind of get a vibe for obviously – you said how your offense has spread the ball around and people have scored. Carolina, obviously, it's a little – I mean, I got a little spoiled offensively. But this Wisconsin team, there's so many games this year where it turns into either isolation basketball. They do have a guy in Ethan Happ who's one of the best bigs in the entire country. But this isn't quite, you know, like Boogie Cousins or, you know, or Anthony Davis or some great – or Cat or, you know, Carl Anthony Towns of NBA. You can't feed a big in college, you know, and let him carry you to a win because bigs either get tired or they get fouled. It's just not quite that type of basketball. But they're just to give you a very simple version, Chris, they just don't shoot the ball that well. When I watched them play against Michigan State, it wasn't the fact that Michigan State was playing superb defense. I'm not trying to take away their win at home against Wisconsin, which was very nice, but there'd be open threes and they'd brick them. And they had a situation that game where Wisconsin's player, Nigel Hayes, who's been there for quite a couple of years, and this is a senior and appears to be his worst year, they went to him isolation four times in a row. And I was like, dude, I can't recall the last time a Wisconsin team who is normally one that shares the ball so well and no one cares who takes a shot would literally do like an NBA possession where they spread out everyone on one side of the court and Nigel went one-on-one. And their point guard, Kone, who has been a little dinged up because of a strained calf, you know, he's been one of them that scored some games. It's just a lot of strange stuff. And I'm not trying to make this just a Wisconsin Badger little speech here, but I'm just truly blown away just from the simple point of a fan of, because this has always been an offense, Chris, where you have a couple of guys that are going to go pro, and there's never an issue, but there's just kind of a funk. And I honestly see that being a massive red flag, because this Wisconsin team normally always is a very good team come tournament time. You know, Baylor, for example, is a team that, you know, when you fill out your bracket, you're like, oh, man, how far do I put them? Because no matter what the seeding, it's like there's a good chance Baylor doesn't make it out the first weekend just because they have the reputation.
And then when you think they're not going to, then they make the Elite Eight, and you're like, what the hell
sure,
is that?
Yeah. And Wisconsin's normally, for the most part, a shoo-in for this Week 16. But this year, again, there's just been so many games where, like, when they played Northwestern, and we were like, man, they lost in the Kohl Center. And, like, that doesn't happen often. And just there's no offensive flow to them, and that's just very scary as a fan. When you see your offense turn into isolation basketball and just let one guy take his turn, and that dude's not even been having a good year, it's kind of like, holy cow, like, what is wrong? And it's just honestly out of mental respect for a team that normally does always run such a great fundamental offense to lose all of it, it's just kind of something, Chris, where I don't know if maybe that the point guard, you know, calf injury, which for all we know he's back being healthy, is such a factor, but it's just strange, you know, kind of, you know, it would be like, you know, your goal for secondary in football this year, which has been pretty good for the last couple of years. If they just had a couple of games where all of a sudden, you know, everyone's throwing the ball on you, and you're like, okay, this was our strong part of our defense in football, and now the guys kind of aren't covering that well, and you just kind of shake your head of like, well, what the hell just happened? And that's kind of where I'm at with them, and I'll stop there, but it's just funky to see a smooth team just have games where you
right.
Start shooting bricks, and it's like, huh. But to flip it around, and then I'll toss it back to you, Badgers are cold, Iowa State's hot. And I'm gracious. My co-host does let me talk about, you know, the three, I guess, teams I cheer for the most. I love Iowa State just because Monte Morris is a badass point guard that barely gets doesn't get enough publicity for the how good he is. And Deontay Burton, just a super fun dude to watch because he can have some games when he has two turnovers or he can make two threes in a row and he maybe do it all in a minute. But Iowa State's been playing really good ball. They won 7 out of 8. They're definitely on a team that is called Who's Hot. They can actually finish second in the Big 12 this year. And their seeding continues to go up. You mentioned your Gophers are ranked 26th. Part of that is Iowa State being ranked 24th. They did beat Baylor.
Which is a crock of
Iowa
shit. No, I'm just kidding.
They did beat Baylor on this past Saturday in Iowa State. And to say a thing for them.
And have Kansas. Too. They beat Kansas once, too.
Yeah, their resume is good, but the main points for them is they have a dozen turn the ball over, which is something that very few teams can take for granted. That dude's had, I believe they said in his last however many games, he has 59 assists and 7 turnovers, and he's had 5 games this year without a single turnover. And that's not a stat.
That's
just
intense
kind of
to call it.
Up stat. Yeah, this dude holds the ball. Like, oh, when the ball is in someone's hand, he touches it nearly every possession. So this isn't some, you know, geeky stat where you're like, oh, well, you're crunching numbers and trying to suck up. No, dude, this dude runs the show. And he's had 5 games here without a single turnover, which is mind-blowing. And like I said, in his last 7 or 8 games, he has 57 assists and, like, 9 turnovers. Like, sign me up for having him as a point guard. And they also shoot the 3 ball about as good as anyone in the country. They have a guy named Naz Long. It's kind of a short abbreviated name of his, who's hit 31 of his last 63s. So we talk about matchups a lot. If you put them in the tournament with teams that like to run and gun, they'll shoot about as good as anyone in the country. Now, if you play a team like Carolina, it'd probably be a bad match for them because Iowa State really only has a freshman center, and that's it. Which, when we were texting this week, I was like, man, if you gave Iowa State, you know, that Lynch from the Gophers, like, holy cow. Now, obviously, you can move people around for any team. I know you could see – Chris could say the same thing to me. Well, God, if you give the Golden Gophers, like, Candy Meeks from Carolina, like, look at that, you know. But there
we don't need anybody.
They really don't.
Well, take my squad. No, I'm just kidding.
But they really don't have a lot of depth down low. But, man, for a team that can shoot the 3 and having probably one of the best point guards in the country, they're definitely a hot trending team. So, for as cold as the Badgers are, a team like Iowa State, who, you know, during the middle of the year, they were like 6th or 7th in the Big 12, kind of in that jumble clav of Big 12 teams, there's a chance they could win second place alone or be the 2 seed in the tournament. And that Big 12 tournament, like I said, it'll be a fun one to watch because it's been a very fun competitive year to watch this year despite the fact Kansas won. And also, lastly, when we do get into all this conference tournament talk, on one hand, you know, it is fun to watch. And if your team loses, as we've mentioned, most teams we've talked about on our show today, they are all going into the tournament. But I'm still a believer in that seeding does matter, you know, because right like a couple weeks ago, Iowa State, they were saying, like, oh, they're an 8 or a 9. And to me, that's always a scary seed, Chris, for a team that you support to beat. Because an 8 or 9 seed means, okay, you won Thursday or Friday, good for you. You know what you get next? You get a 1 seed. I mean, I'd rather be a 10 seed than be an 8 or a 9 or be a 7. But that 8 or 9 seed, it's like, all right, you made the tournament. We respect you. You're an 8 or a 9. Good to go. And bam, now you get to play Carolina or Kansas or Gonzaga for your second game of the weekend. And good luck pulling that off. So,
not to mention the equally tight game that you're probably leading the tournament off of, you know?
Yeah. You're playing a team who's an 8 or 9. That's like, and normally, those games, Chris, I would say at least 2 out of every 4 8 or 9 games either come down to buzzer beaters or it's like at most like a 2 or 3 point spread in Vegas. So, you know, on one hand, you'd be like, it's conference tournament week. It's fun to watch, but my team's in the tournament, so it's not a huge deal. Well, being a 6 seed compared to being 8 or 9, could actually be two wins you make in your conference tournament. And maybe you don't care and give a crap about playing a one seed, but whenever I see those 8 or 9 games of this team I cheer for, it's like, oh, man. Like, you know, Iowa State, who up until a little bit ago was 8 or 9, it's like, dude, you don't want to play a one seed until you have to. If you're a 6 seed, you're like, okay, you know, now we're playing like our opening round game is against a 12, which is much nicer than 8 or 9. And now we're not looking at playing the best team in our bracket. We're playing some good teams, obviously, because no team in the tournament's easy. But seeding does matter because normally the committee does a very good job. Now, I'm sure when our brackets come out, you and I can say, hey, I thought maybe, you know, so-and-so should have been a 4 and so-and-so should have been a 6, and they could have swapped spots. But for the most part, the committee does an excellent job, Chris, of putting teams in order correctly. And 1 or 2 spots could be something to where, in theory, they should reward you properly. And a lot of times teams can move up 2 or 3 spots or go backwards based off how you do in your conference tournament.
Well, and, you know, the committee does a really good job at pampering North Carolina and putting them in front of their home crowd, but we won't get into that. Talking about Wisconsin, though, yeah, I do think they may be too focused on the stallion down low, because the point guard
possible, yeah.
Didn't see you know, I think that they, because you're right, the ball moves on that team, and you had an example of the forward there, you know, the senior doing that in that example, but that hasn't been all season they haven't been doing that. They've been actually featuring, you know, the numbers guy. And that's – they don't always do that either. You know what I mean? They don't always do that either. And they – I mean, they go to him a lot. And when you have Keenan as well, who now looks like he's a little healthier in the last 2 games I've seen, he looks a little healthier. But
sure.
I think both of those – considering both those guys, considering their careers at Wisconsin, you know, they probably thought that they'd be the top 2 guys for scoring and shot making and assist and all that, where it hasn't been that. Not only that, though, this is the first full year of the new coach, right? Because he took over last year when they were actually struggling.
I think it's actually his second, because he took over at the very end 2 years ago when all the stuff with Bo Ryan came out. So this is his second full year there. Second with a little bit of change on the other end of it. Because
Has it already been 3 years since the Badgers made the final? No, that's 2 years ago. Duke, that's 2 years ago. Because Tyus is a second-year guy, 2 years ago.
Last
year they were struggling at the season. Remember, they had a losing record in the Big Ten, and it looked like they may not make the tournament, potentially, because it was early in the season. And then Bo Ryan left during the season. Then Greg Lewis or Greg?
Greg Gard. And that's what I thought, Greg too, that I swore when I was watching the game this past – they said this was his third year, but even I kind of shook my head. I'm like, I don't think this is his second floor. But anyway, I get what you're saying. But, yeah, I'm with you, too. I think the numbers would say this is his first complete full year, yeah.
But anyway, I was just kind of throwing that out there as just a little thing. But if you look at the – you know, they did okay in the non-conference. Marquette is a good team. Syracuse is improving down the stretch. But really, every time they had a chance to step up, they didn't get it done. Creighton earlier in the year, especially the full-strength Creighton. North Carolina didn't get it done. So you start to look at it, then they got in the conference play, and maybe we just overrated them. Maybe we just thought, well, we know the top 3 guys on their team. 2 of them are super experienced, and 2 of them are clutch-ass players to go along with this new stud. Because I remember you and I were really big on Purdue and especially Wisconsin not being in the top 4 seed. We were talking about it, but if you think about it, they beat Rutgers. They beat an Indiana team that has 2 guys missing and have had it all season. They lost to Purdue. Not a bad loss, but they lost to them. Then they beat Ohio State, beat Michigan, went overtime with Minnesota, beat Penn State, beat Rutgers again, beat Illinois, beat Indiana again, beat Nebraska. You see what I'm saying here? Now watch this.
Mm-hmm.
They go against Western. They're going to the tourney more than likely, right? They lose to them at home. A bubble team, Michigan, they lose to them. Now they turned around and beat Maryland, but now they've lost to Ohio State and Michigan State. Ohio State ain't going to the tournament. And Michigan State's a bubble team. So they really, now that I add it up, they don't have that good of a, they're not having that good of a year on the low. And I guess it took this last couple of weeks for them to actually lose. I guess we were just living off what they've been doing. The thing is, they can get to the Sweet 16 pretty damn easy. You know what I mean? That's the thing with their talent, you'd think. You know, with those three guys alone, you know?
It is fascinating, sir. It truly is. Now, I will say one thing. I'm not sure, Chris, if this was just kind of a based on who was playing during the game. When I was watching, I believe it was Iowa and Maryland game this past weekend, and they were showing potential players for the Big Ten Player of the Year. And they showed Swanigan from Purdue, who obviously is worth being mentioned. Melo Tremble from Maryland, whose last two games has been trash. And then that Peter Jock from Iowa. And maybe they only wanted to show three people, but to not consider Ethan Happ for Big Ten Player of the Year would truly be a joke, because he leads the Badgers in points, leads them in rebounds, leads them in steals and in blocks. Like, I mean, say what you want about the Badgers this year, but that dude's been playing out of his mind as one of the best bigs in the whole country. So if that was just a show who's playing, but that dude needs to be either win the Big Ten Player of the Year award or be mentioned in it, because despite the flaws they've had, the one reason they have been good is because that dude has been playing like a beast. You just can't have him be a whole team. But – you know, because the Big 12
people
really talk
about
that.
Well,
he's
not just
the
whole team, I believe.
No, he isn't.
But Swanigan, if they win, if Purdue wins, I think Swanigan should get the Player of the Year, to be honest with you. If Purdue wins the Big 10 tournament.
And I would argue that
either they have less talent. They have less talent.
True.
If you look at their
– I would just think that Happ needs to be second. But, yeah, 100%. Swanigan's a hell of a player, too.
That must have been a weird graphic, or they mentioned something earlier or something, because I've never seen a graphic they put up that they haven't mentioned him. They've always mentioned him and Swanigan first. So, but either way, let's move on, because that's just something. I mean, we'll see at the end of the year if he weren't in the voting. I don't know. Well, that obviously isn't a voting. That was just a something they put up. But like I mentioned earlier, just looking at this new bracketology from today, we will look at some games coming up in the next couple of days, in this week, in the last week of the regular season. Gonzaga still holds on to a number one seed, not number one overall. I think Kansas will probably get that. I guess you could say Villanova as well, but I think that losing to Butler twice will probably hurt them to have the overall number one seed. But who knows? You never know coming down the stretch as well. North Carolina is now completely bumped up on that number one seed. Butler really looks like they're closing in well. UCLA up to a three seed, just kind of looking at it. You know, another squad that's fallen way down, just in general. I mean, a couple weeks ago, they were leading by a full game, just beating Florida. South Carolina. Talk about pretenders. They went from contenders to pretenders really quick. Speaking of, Wisconsin's now down to a 6. Iowa State's up to a 7. There's not a lot of things that surprise me on this stuff. It'll be interesting to see where Cincinnati, because they've been falling off a little bit, where they rank. Florida State, they haven't been looking that good as well. We talk about who's hot and who's not. Florida State is not hot right now. They've come down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
A surprise to me, Marshall. I'm looking at this stuff, and they got Oklahoma State at number 6 right now. A 6 seed, not number 6, sorry. A 6 seed. They got in the same region. They got Minnesota as a 7th seed going against Virginia Tech in the first round. That'd be tough. But Oklahoma State, to me, kind of – I'm kind of a little shook on why they would be a 6th seed. And as I say it, I'm going to just open up. Not to say that they are a bad club, because they've looked good this year. I think they have a couple of quality wins. I know they beat Arkansas. I know they beat West Virginia. And I'm trying to look at their non-conference right now. I'm looking at their non-conference. They do have the Shockers. They beat the Shockers, who now are ranked. They lost to Maryland barely. They got their ass whooped by North Carolina. So I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, why are they a 6th seed, Oklahoma State? I don't know. I know they're hot. I know they're hot, but
I was going to say I think you intentionally set this up just for the who's hot, who's not, because they've won their last 8 or 9 games in the Big 12, and most people consider that the best conference in basketball after the ACC. So it could just kind of be a trending of them being super hot. And like I said, I think they have won 8 of their past 9 in the Big 12 conference. So I think besides
right. They only
beating
have
Kansas,
one great West Virginia.
Well, I guess you just got to – I guess you're just going to give them credit though out of it just simply due to the fact that it is the Big 12. You know, to win 8 out of 9 conference games in general is quite an accomplishment. And it probably looks
like – I'm not taking away their accomplishment. Yeah, I just don't think they should be a 6th seed, that's all. I think you need quality wins to go along with – you know what I mean?
And especially to flip this either way that you'd like to, they did start off, I believe they started off conference play 1-6. So they've really had, Chris, played a topsy-turvy year. You mentioned that their non-conference was okay. And then you start off conference play, I believe, 0-6 or 1-5 or 1-6. And then you win 8 in a row. It's like, dude, what kind of team is that truly symbolizing? And from that resume that we've spoken of, that is kind of like that magical 8 or 9 seed. I was just talking about it as kind of like the, oh, crap, we got to play a 1-seed team, because their resume isn't exactly super glamorous. You have a bunch of highs and a bunch of lows, so it's like, where do we throw a dart on you?
Not a bunch of highs, though, as far as quality wins, though.
Just highs from that streak they're riding on, yes. But did they have a win over Kansas? I don't believe so. So – yeah,
no, West Virginia is their best win. Speaking of Kansas, they're down 47-39 right now with 12 to play at home. They are down right now as we speak.
And realistically,
knows?
Chris, that West Virginia win, I mean, I just saw they basically Baylor went on like a 24-6 run in the end of that game. That West Virginia team, I believe, has no chance of making a deep run in the tournament at all, because I don't think they're going to recover from that mental letdown.
Man,
they
I'm
going to
take
Kansas.
That out of you if something happens, I'll tell you that.
I don't think they're going to fully recover from that Kansas win, or that can't, I mean, to blow a 14-point
well,
lead.
Right. They have.
It,
true.
Just it, when,
right.
when they've been
Good
close
point.
Games, now they have won a couple of close games down the stretch, but I've seen them have when they played Texas Tech, they were up at home by 8 points with like 1:20 to go, and they had to go into double overtime. They were up 20 on Texas the last week, and the game got down to 8. You know, Baylor went on like a 22-6 run to close out this game. That team is just kind of a shell-shocked team. They're honestly a hell of a basketball team. They have that big name like Ethan, who's a very talented player, and they have a good point guard. But, man, when you come down the stretch with them, it's like, oh, here we go again. Aw, crap. And for as much as we can name, Chris, people like a Monte Morris, for example, who's a point guard that won't turn the ball over, and you can trust him down the stretch, teams can also get that bad reputation, Chris, of, time to start gripping the ball a little tighter. Like, aw, crap. We're in a close game again. And for as good as coaches get positive reinforcement in players' heads, you can also get negative reinforcement in your heads of, oh, man, it's a close game again. Time to get a little
right,
tight.
Here we go again. Right.
When you play tight, that's not a good good buy for a team, and it showed over and over again now. So I'd be very impressed if they honestly even make the pass.
Well, then you're really making my case for me then against Oklahoma State, because if that's their best win, then I don't know what to tell you. But either way, we will revisit that, no doubt about it, like we'll revisit several things. Let's get on to what's coming up here in the last week. Now, I'm going to name several games that we can chit-chat about. Other games I'm just going to name as far as still something on the line or interesting when it comes to the seed, yada, yada, yada. So, obviously, the one that stands out tomorrow, Florida State at Duke. That's a big, big game as far as sure, you're not going to win the ACC, but any big win against a ranked team down the stretch is only going to help you, no doubt about it, especially with the name brand of Duke, even though they are struggling. We know that name brand at times can play a game or can play, you know, a part in it. Another game, Arkansas and Florida. Arkansas is a pretty good club. They're 22-7. Florida was on that 9-game winning streak. Can they keep it going? You know, keep it going. I think they will at home, but that has a lot of meaning for both teams, I think, but especially Arkansas to keep up with that. Obviously, and actually, a Friday game, Iowa State at West Virginia. That kind of threw me off. I wasn't ready for that. Big, big game rivalry-wise, and just to, you know, stay on that first line and everything like that. And obviously, we just talked about Duke needing some big wins to stop the bleeding of their you know, what's going on with their program right now down the stretch here. Duke at North Carolina, that's a big one on Saturday. Miami against Florida State, that's more of a, hey, let's get seated type thing. Let's keep winning. Mm-hmm. Miami still need another 25. They still need – they only have 20 wins. So, obviously, they may have more wins tonight. They are down 55-52 with 3:30 left to Virginia Tech on the road. Another big one in the ACC, Marshall, Louisville and Notre Dame. I almost said North Dakota, but Notre Dame. And then on Sunday, you know, this is huge. Northwestern sitting at that 20-9, couple, you know, an extra win would help them. Purdue at Northwestern and Minnesota at Wisconsin. I know you're going to want to talk about your boys, so you can lead with that as well, but just looking at a couple of these games down the stretch, man, what do you think is going to go down here, man? I mean, Duke's got a hell of a week. A couple of these teams, man, they really have some work cut out for them, and this is all about building your resume now. So these games are very and very important just because the ACC might be wrapped up or the Big 12's wrapped up. A couple of these conferences, SEC, now looks wrapped up from Kentucky. But you still need the Florida and Arkansas is still trying to rise. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and again, I'll repeat my point. I honestly think seeds do matter. I mean, some of it is luck of draw who you face, but I'd much rather bust my butt now to be a 5-seed over a 6 or a 7 over an 8 or whatever the case is. And obviously, Chris, just positive trends is a huge bonus too. Now, there are teams like, I believe, UConn, the year they won it a couple of years ago, they went into like the end of the regular season cold. They got hot in the Big East and wrote the title wave through and all that. But I'd much rather have a team with confidence going to the tournament than a team that's cold. And for Duke, they really are kind of in a funk, and this can be a hater take, or this can just be an honest sport fan take. I think they had a lot of hype of a bunch of freshmen and a bunch of bigs, and they really have kind of let the team down. That Jefferson for them is just kind of a guy that is always hurt and has not put up great numbers. That Harry Giles, who's supposed to be, I believe, the number one sought after recruit in high school this year, is not doing much at all. Coach K said that Grayson Allen hurt his ankle, which I find a little bit of a karma kick to him for maybe if he didn't trip people all the time, his ankle wouldn't hurt. Apparently can't drive anymore. They say that he's quit driving, which has affected his game. Honestly, the one good thing going for Duke is the fact that Kennard has had a fantastic year. and that Tatum kid is probably the best player on the team. So
he's a great all-around overall player. You're right.
And that kid is a hell of a player. And I don't like saying that because it's Duke, but I'll be honest. That dude, he made clutch shots when they needed him against Carolina. When I've seen him play the last couple of games, the dude can dunk. He can shoot the three. He's super athletic. The dude's fast and quick. Like, that dude can ball. But all the other help he was supposed to get has not really came this year. Because I remember at the start of the year, it was Duke and all else. And that's not me just talking trash. That was ESPN articles and SI and everyone. It was Duke is the team to beat. And everyone else was looking up at them. Well, you know, they've really had some issues due to the fact, besides Tatum, who's, like I said, having a marvelous season, continues to, he needs a little more help to help them out. Because Kennard and Tatum can't win you everything, but those boys have done the part they can, and obviously I look forward to hopefully splitting the season series with Duke with getting a victory on Saturday. But also, on the other hand, this Florida State thing, I'm a little confused, because normally, Chris, it always seems that Leonard Hamilton, who I believe is a hell of a coach for Florida State, it seems like the guy's been there for at least the last 10 years. They always play great defense, but he never seems to have a boatload of talent. And this year, he's got a guy in Isaac who's supposed to be a top five pick in the draft. He has Ravion Mainz and Bacon as guards who are along with Isaac, who are all very good. He's got a couple of bigs. I think maybe, and this is just a guess, maybe he has too many pieces to a puzzle. I don't know, because at the start of the year, Florida State was first in the ACC. They were kicking ass. They were destroying people. And you're like, dude, this team is 12 deep. Hamilton has all the pieces he needs. He has more talent than usual, and he's a deep bench. But ever since they lost to Carolina, going back to like the weekend the Cowboys lost in the playoffs, we're going back to what, middle of January, they haven't quite been the same.
January 14th, so yep.
I'm not sure if it's just
well,
maybe
to be fair, though, hold on. To be fair, they beat Notre Dame and Louisville after those two that loss. So let's be clear. They went on a Georgia Tech Syracuse loss, and then they won three more, and then Notre Dame again, and now since then, well, they've won two in a row. So, yeah, I would say after that, because they had – I mean, you beat Notre Dame, who was 15th and 12th at the time, Louisville. So, Georgia Tech and Syracuse is when it started to get – they kind of win two and win – or lose two and then win three or two. Then lose two, they you're right, though, they haven't won – you know, lose one and then win three or four or five in a row.
Yeah, and I say that because I do hold them up to a very high regard. I just wonder some games even with their wins, like I know they won against Clemson this past Saturday, in which was a 1 or 2 point game. Maybe it's just simply the fact that he has an abundance of talent, and on one hand, Chris, you do take for granted how fun it is to have that many people. But on the other hand, you can almost kind of overwork yourself a little bit just because you get in the rhythm of, man, okay, well, these guys are all going to play. So, well, if this guy gets called, I'll bench him and he can come in. And I don't know. Maybe it is just too many hands in the cookie jar. Now, again,
or maybe you overrated them too, potentially. We could have just overrated them. You know what I mean?
True as well. Now, again, though, we're again a little nitpicky on a team that is having a very respectable year in the best conference in the land, that could still finish as a three or fourth best in that conference, and who could end up, you know, sweeping Duke and beating them. So, you know, just being minorly critical, but again, we're talking about a good conference. My point, which I meant to say 10 seconds ago, was I don't want to play them in the tournament, okay? Now, maybe they've had some weaknesses in the ACC, but so has everyone else in this conference. I mean, Carolina, you know, they put up 44 points tonight, which is the worst ever under Roy. And I think my team can, you know, win the title this year, but the the ACC this year is a freaking, you know, it's a Grand Canyon. Like, good luck. So we'll see.
So who do you,
but,
with all that said, how do you see the game playing out?
Sorry.
We got to pick the pace up a little bit.
Okay. I got Duke losing to Florida State just because they're an awful matchup for Duke, just because Duke is never as physical as Florida State. And I just think the downward trend continues, and I think Carolina beats them as well. So I think Duke goes into the conference tournament on like a 5-game losing streak, I believe. Yeah. I got Duke going 0-2 this week with my boys taking care of business, just because I think they'll be hot. And Carolina and Duke normally split home and home anyways. When the home team wins the first one, normally the home team wins the second one as well, my friend. Sorry, we're on a little bit of rant there.
And vice versa, too. Even if you steal one, they'll steal the other. You know what I mean? It's very rare that you sweep them. I like Duke desperation against Florida State just because of the desperation. I also like Florida over Arkansas. I look for that to be a good hardcore basketball game, though, for all the hardcores out there that want to check that out. Friday night basketball, ESPN2, 6 o'clock Central, Iowa State at West Virginia. I really like that game. Like you said, I do think North Carolina will bounce back off tonight's performance. I really think it was just Virginia. Kind of like I just mentioned Duke. They're going to be at home. They need a freaking win. They need to stop the bleeding. They'll find a way to get that done. I also think Louisville will beat Notre Dame at home. Miami and Florida State. That's a good one. And that both teams need it, especially Miami. I know they got that 25th. They are losing with 57.3 seconds left, 62-59. Virginia's got that. They got something going for them as well. They're like a good tough club. They're no easy out. That Virginia Tech, I think it was double overtime game. Virginia Tech. That was a fun ass game to watch. I also like Purdue to go on the road and beat Northwestern to kind of put Northwestern in the, oh, man, did we make it? Oh, we got to get a couple more. We're back on the bubble. I'm gonna pick that, and I do think Wisconsin will not lose at home to Minnesota, even though Minnesota is streaking. Potentially they could be on their 8th win, but we'll see because they do play during the week here, so I'm not going to sit there and count that as a W.
Sure.
But anything else you wanna wrap up some of those games I just mentioned? You can make your pick or whatever, or anything that you want to talk about, bud?
Yeah, I do believe, Chris. It could have been altered tonight with West Virginia losing, but I believe I heard this past Saturday that Iowa State and West Virginia were playing for a potential second place. So maybe now it's Iowa State and Baylor. But again, man, that Big 12. Is such a cluster up top, along with the ACC. I mean, you've mentioned
for
Duke
second
this week
place,
and yeah,
cluster for second. Because Kansas, man,
You
know, you hate Kansas, but you gotta give them respect, dude. They were taking the heat this year, and they went through a murder's row there, dude. Their schedule there for about 2.5-3 weeks was. I mean, they're battle-tested, dude. I don't know if they're winning right now. I should double-check that score. But, man, we got to give it up to Kansas. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you out, buddy.
No. And honestly, I mean, this is coming from a Kansas hater. They did this year where they had the toughest schedule in a month more than anyone at basketball. It wasn't even close. They went through a gauntlet, 100%. You're right. The battle for seeding – for finishing second in the ACC or the Big 12 is still coming down to last week, which is awesome for basketball. But overall, I think Iowa State, again, they're trying to get second place, which definitely gets you out of that sacred being 8 or 9 seed, which I think is scary for any fan, especially along with your Gophers as well. And I want to see the type of team that does come out to play your Gophers on Sunday, Chris. This is a Badger team that we just nicely said about 20 minutes ago that is just in a funk with a lot of great talent, but an offense that can't find a way to gel together. So it would be another very impressive win that could be I honestly think the Gophers win that game could be a bump up a seed game. I mean, that'd be a hell of a win and a place to stuff to win. You
that
know,
would give us four road games inside the Big Ten. That would be nuts.
That's a hell of a good run. But overall,
it was overtime game the first time around too.
I'll say this for kind of my overall point is I was sitting down at the bar watching the Iowa State game, Baylor game, and talking to a couple of guys who just actually came from the TCU West Virginia game, and I was like, you know, normally last year, I remember going into our show where going back about 2 weeks into relative data is where we are now, and I remember telling our show, I was like, Carolina is the best team in the country. The seniors have really taken over, and we have a great chance of winning the title. And I was a freaking Villanova dagger shot away from that being close to true, or at least an overtime worthy game. Now, if you said, Marshall, give me your final four, and I'll give you $100 if you can name two out of the four, I would give you four teams, Chris, but I sure as hell wouldn't feel too good about it. And that's why I think it's going to be super fun this year. You know, we always talk about how it's so much fun to watch college basketball. But, man, this, I mean, if you really said pick four Final Fours right now, or pick your Final Four right now, I guess you throw in Kansas because they're battle-tested, and then I'd want to throw in Carolina because they're my boys and they can play offense. But this isn't quite the regular kind of gel feeling you get with college hoops where it's like, oh man, freaking Kentucky's so good. It's just we're really looking at a very fun year where we've had a lot of good conferences.
And it's maintained it too the whole year this, you know?
Yeah,
this is kind of like broken record, but it's so true.
It is. It's a point that we've mentioned almost every week. But again, I kind of have to because you normally do get those years where it's like, all right now you and I could do our show and say, Chris, I think Kentucky's a lock in the Final Four and Carolina is too. And my other random point, which I wanted to say, which just hit me today as an epiphany as I was going to my tennis match for coaching today, and I was like, if you just brought in a fan this year, it was a college basketball fan, but you didn't tell him a single thing about last year. Would anyone know that Villanova won the title last year? I mean, has there been a quieter, recognized team that, for all we know, is going to be a complete pain in the ass to beat because they're basically the same team as last year? But we've heard, you know, Frank Mason on Kansas probably tweeted about 2,000 times. And talk about the Big 12 and the ACC.
You know why that is.
And the Pac-12. You would not know. If you just went into a bar and said, hey, by the way, I'm going to give you five teams. You tell me you won the title last year and they didn't know. No random guy would guess because they don't get mentioned at all, which is just kind of crazy. Normally you hear that reputation of defending champs or they need to go back and defend the throne or anything. It's like, dude, I wouldn't even know if Villanova went to the Sweet 16 last year with as quiet as a coverage as it got this year, Chris. And it just kind of hit me. I'm like, damn, if I didn't know, I would have assumed that they're okay. But they sure as hell didn't beat Carolina last year for a championship. Talk about sliding under the rug for a team that's going to be a one seed that I don't want to play anytime soon because God knows they got almost the same squad as last year. Just kind of made me shake my head a little bit, buddy.
A lot of that has to do with outlet, though, like their TV contracts, because people still don't know FS1. As funny as that sounds, look at the ratings on FS1. People don't know that channel like they know ESPN. And they've had a couple of Fox games during the on a Saturday. But honestly, it has to do with the Big East and their current contracts do not have a major outlet beyond Fox during the day. And who thinks of Fox basketball during the day on a Saturday? Do you? I know I don't.
Yeah.
I think it's CBS, I think it's ESPN. You know what I mean? So I think that plays, it goes to show you how, even though, and I mentioned this before, even though I think they did a hell of a job with what they didn't have much to work with, the Big East, once it got broken up basketball-wise. They did a hell of a job at adding Butler and Creighton and these quality basketball schools. However, they just don't have the eyeballs right now. That's a good call. I mean, I will say this. For a long time, Hart had gotten a lot of attention,
sure,
in my opinion. But that is a good point. And I really think that has to do with that. Because, you know, a lot of times it took years for Gonzaga to break through because they'd be on that late game. It'd be buried in the schedule, and you just but when you go undefeated or start to make runs at the turn of the 2000s, they started making runs, and people start to finally figure out how you know who you are and that type of thing in your program. It takes a little while, but that's a good point. That's a very good point, and I honestly think that's what it comes down to. I really do. I just think it's the lack of exposure with that FS1, and all you have to do is look at the ratings, man, and you go, wow, that's a Tuesday night? Like, boxing on FS1 does better normally. And we're not talking about what's coming up on CBS this week in Thurman or Garcia, Thurman and Porter. We're not talking about household names. We're talking about prospect stuff. This prospect mid-level stuff on FS1 beats college basketball. So that tells you a lot, you know what I mean? So not night in and night out, but like on the Tuesday night, last Tuesday night, it sure did. It doubled it, actually. So FS1 is still struggling to get the name brand, and it takes a long, long time. And it sounds weird, like me and you know FS1. If you like baseball, then you know FS1 more, and you know Fox more. What do you think of Fox? Football and baseball, right? But you don't
think about
that at all. Basketball, you know what I mean? So, but that's a great point. That's a great point.
Yeah, and it's a shame, too, because for those who do watch Fox basketball, you get to hear maybe the best announcer ever, because I've heard a couple of Villanova games called this year by Gus Johnson. And find me a better guy to call a game than listen to that man. I still have dreams that one day he'll come back and call up the answer CBS. That probably won't happen because the contract, and he's happy where he's at, and he calls like 40 or 50 Milwaukee Bucks games a year. But as I truly grew up and started to love basketball over the last 15 years, there was nothing like watching a March Madness game and just having Gus Johnson make the calls, and just that dude's voice, like, it, for anyone like our age, Chris, like, you can't remember a specific play, but I just remember so many, like, buzzer beater, like, March Madness games where you can just picture Gus Johnson making a call, and you're like, dude, this is why this is the best tournament ever, because you got this dude with going all out with his voice, which would always hit such a high level.
But he wasn't
that it never
screaming.
Was,
you
no,
know what I mean? He didn't scream, but he was loud. And that's a hard thing to do. He's kind of like the modern-day little smoother Dickie V. He's that excitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. And you literally stole it from me. I was going to say, he's a guy that would always raise his voice level, but it was never like screech your heart in the ears. He just has that perfect tone of how to call a big shot. And that's something I pray one more time we'll get to hear again, because March Madness, man, it's coming around, and you know, the cliche bits can be used, but this year, I mean, literally, Chris, hell, let's just do it for fun to wrap up our show. If you had to pick a Final Four now, maybe we can look back in the podcast. I mean, I just for grins, Chris, I'll take, you know, Kansas and Carolina for the two lock-ins, and then I will go along.
You're
with,
walking a thin line out on that edge, man. I'd be careful. It's windy today.
I'm telling you, man, Texas has done good things and bad things to me. I don't know.
It's a flat land, dude. Maybe it'll get you, man. It's windy. That wind picks up on the flat land.
I'll take Carolina and Kansas, and I then will take let's go Arizona,
I'll take Nova.
Arizona and Iowa State. I'll put Iowa State out on a limb, and I'll take Zona with Kansas and Carolina, and hopefully I'll hit one out of those four. We'll see, though.
I'll take. God, I like Arizona too, in a sense, but I'll take. Well, the two that you said, I'll take Nova, and I'll take UCLA, UCLA. I'm taking UCLA.
All right, you and I both put a Pac-12 team in the Final Four. that's been forbidden of the last couple of years.
And Love and Westbrook, they're not there either. So we'll see. I know who does think they're in the Final Four, though, and it's a certain father out there. My guess is he said, if my son wanted to win 1-on-5, he could win the tournament 1-on-5.
Is he allowed to bring up his two brothers? Is there some type of rule where his brothers can join him on the UCLA team and just, like, it can be, like, three balls on the court at once? Like, is that allowed? Like, that dad's got power, man. He can make pull and he makes stuff happen. I don't know.
I just hope he doesn't go into the coach's office like Humphrey's dad did and sit there and talk about some dumb shit that hurts the team. Hopefully he's just a dude who is really overly proud of his sons, you know?
Sure.
No, of course, it'll be a one and done anyway. But what else you got? Let's wrap it up here.
All right. I got a feeling Duke loses both games this week. That'll be my final note for the week. As usual, I was like, then on a positive note, basketball, this is the best time of the year coming up. Small conferences actually start tournament play today for like the really small out east conferences. If you're a Gonzaga fan, your conference tournament starts, I believe, on Thursday. North Dakota State, where I went to college, I believe they start on a Wednesday. So if you are a mid-major fan, you got to get locked in this week. Because the one super cool thing, which I can't believe we didn't even mention this week, was the fact that we've not heard a lot of mid-major buzz this year. And there's not a whole lot of great mid-major teams, or at least I don't feel there's as many as normal. So if the team you love is a mid-major team and your resume ain't too sexy, your only way you truly get in is by winning your conference tournament. So on one hand, it almost makes the conference tournaments this week more important. Carolina's going into the tournament no matter what. They could lose their first game at ACC, and who cares? But if you play in the MAC or in the in a smaller divisional Ohio Valley Conference, you got your one chance in hell, and that's why you'll see those kids like crying at the end on a buzzer beater. So conference tournaments start this week, and they may not have the big names you're used to watching, but it means even more because this literally is their one ticket in. So on that note, hope all is well for family. I hope everyone's safe and healthy. Enjoy the basketball this week. Chris and I will love you to listen next week because now we're even closer and closer to Selection Sunday. Take care. Have a good night. Peace.